It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru...
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Houdini!
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soce. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which we'll someday update at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
What you just heard is a man who put Jawa noises in the show. That's Kobe Slagle. Because the most important movie ever opened today.
Yep.
Sisters. No. We'll get to that in a little bit. Actually, we will talk about Sisters, as well as The Danish Girl. And in the second half...
Oh, I could have played Rosemary Clooney. From White Christmas.
You could. You could also do that next week's show.
Good.
Because next week is Christmas.
Christmas.
Where we will dip into the archives for Ace. Well, no, that's not entirely true. We will be discussing some movies because The Hateful Eight and Concussion open next week, but then we will dip into some of our greatest hits package. So you'll hear that. A little later on in the show, we are going to replay my classic chat with actor Nicholas Smith, who passed away on December 6th at the age of 81. Best known around here, of course, is Mr. Rumble from the British series Are You Being Served? And he came in studio, my goodness, several years ago. I believe it was about 6 or 7. As part of the British Telly Club, and we had a few minutes in studio with him. Emma even asked a few questions. So anyway, we'll hear that in the second half of the show. But ladies and gentlemen, yes, it has been a very long day in the life of one Matthew Soce on this, the last day of my 45th year on this planet. Birthday tomorrow. Who else has a birthday today? Lonnie Brooks and Keith Richards.
Oh.
So hopefully they'll be sleeping in on my birthday.
I shared mine with Frank Sinatra and Bob Barker.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Sinatra is pretty cool.
Yep.
Hope the beauties jump out of the cake if you're a Bob Barker fan. Well, reading the history of Bob, they probably did. Anyway, it's been a long day. I was on Channel 13 at about 6-ish this morning to talk about the film. You can see that on my Facebook and Twitter page. You can also go to WTHR.com and see that. Freshly shorn, Matthew Soce. I'm talking to third person. I know I'm tired. Anyway, and tomorrow night is the Blues Holiday Party at 8 o'clock. Is there enough Brazilian Christmas music?
It's hard to find.
We got to work on
that. You can find it, but it's hard to find.
Okay, so that means...
Kind of a novelty. Not really a mainstream type thing.
But it's all better than Santa Got ran over by a reindeer.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrible. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, yes, Star Wars, The Force Awakens. It's open. I saw it at 7 o'clock, 7:15 actually, last night, and then went to bed at 10 so I could get up at 4:30 to get ready for TV. That's the kind of day I've had. Just got off the board here, two doors down at WFYI HD1. So here we are. So instead of playing the trailer, which you've seen 1,000 times, and I actually shared this with Kobe and a few other co-workers, it was work-related, so it's okay. But instead of the trailer, we're going to play for you, it was about a month ago, I believe, Saturday Night Live did a skit based on screen test auditions by some of the cast members portraying famous actors, and then some actual actors playing themselves in these screen tests. So enjoy this.
Hello, I'm J.J. Abrams. When it was announced in 2013 that I would be directing a new Star Wars film,
I immediately went to work looking to cast the next generation of heroes. And now, a month out from the film's release, I thought it might be fun to show you some of the never-before-seen screen tests. Please enjoy.
Chemistry test with Sofia Vergara and Daisy Ridley.
Hurry, the ship's leaving.
Yes! We need to go to space! Is it for the little minions?
What?
I love minions! The little yellow guy! They're so funny, you can't understand nothing they say!
Shaquille O'Neal, reading for Chewbacca. Screen test, Javier Bardem.
I have a suggestion. Well, of course there is a lightsaber, you know? But maybe he's coming from here. You see it is coming from here? Eh? And then we have two little ones like a and they are very powerful.
John Boyega, testing for Finn.
A black stormtrooper. Yeah, right. A black stormtrooper.
Chemistry test for John Mayer and Daisy Ridley.
You saved my life. How can I ever repeat?
We gotta use the force.
Dame Maggie Smith.
I'm sorry, what exactly am I to do with this?
Emma Stone for Rey, take five.
So, just before we start, I know that the Star Wars universe is very diverse, and I don't know if you saw the movie Aloha, but I can play a very convincing part Asian woman.
Winona Judd, testing for Rey.
I know you do a lot of father storylines, but what about a mama? Or a horse? Or the Lord Jesus Christ? Oh, yeah. Now we have it, fun.
All right, so I feel like the force is controlled through the eyes.
Wrong.
Is that George Lucas?
Not controlled through the eyes. I'm not George Lucas.
You are George Lucas.
I'm not the George Lucas you're looking for.
Screen test. David Beckham.
So he's playing Fissin. Oh, I'm a bend it.
No, please. No.
You will get me a Coke Zero.
We don't have any Coke Zero.
You will get me a Coke Zero.
George, we only have Diet Coke.
I find your lack of Coke Zero disturbing. Star Wars.
Chris Tucker, screen test.
Hey, can you feel the force coming out of my mouth? Coming.
Chemistry test, Michael Bublé and Daisy Ridley.
Another season, another reason. For making Wookiee.
Danny DeVito auditioning for BB-8.
Right?
John Hamm.
I kind of wrote some of my own stuff. I think I gave you guys copies. So if you guys want to start, you have the first line. It's, what's up, Hamm Solo? And I'm like, how's it going, guys?
Leslie Jones, screen test.
Captain, we have entered the Romulan neutral zone, but our shields are at 12%.
Yeah, that's great, Leslie, but that's Star Trek. We're making a new Star Wars.
So there you go. That was fun. I didn't have time to edit some of the more visual jokes like David Beckham and Danny DeVito, but there you go. And it's funny because watching the film last night, every time Chewbacca came on, I kept thinking of Shaq as Chewbacca. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I know everyone's...
What is there to say about Star Wars?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Mr. Slagle. It's directed by J.J. Abrams, who also co-wrote the script. Co-writing credits for him, Lawrence Kasdan, who, of course, did the screenplay for Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, and Michael Arndt, who is known for the screenplays of Little Miss Sunshine and Toy Story 3. What J.J. Abrams has done with this film, with The Force Awakens, is very similar to what he has done with the last two Star Trek films. And by the way, I saw this new Star Trek trailer last night. To go with this picture. So kind of what has been happening with Star Trek, and also, even though Abrams has nothing to do with it, what has happened with the last two James Bond movies. There is a combination of old and new together that should please everybody. Will this film make you forget the last three films? Probably. I think so.
You mean episodes 1, 2, and 3?
The last three ones, the last three films that came out, not the first three that I saw as a kid when I was 7, 9, and 13. I believe that's those are the correct ages. But yeah, because I was 7 when the first Star Wars film came out in 1977. How old were you when you had your first Star Wars experience?
10.
10? Mm-hmm. And it was the very, very first?
Yeah, Star Wars.
Okay, so you were at the right time.
1996, 7-ish.
And I was way older. What I've and watching the crowd last night, there was a gentleman with a lightsaber next to me, sitting next to me.
Naturally.
And most of the screens at AMC Castleton were devoted to Star Wars, obviously. Mm-hmm. There was a 5-year-old behind me that, you know, within the first couple of minutes just started to ask questions, and I started to dread. I thought, oh, don't want to ask questions.
You mean they didn't watch 4, 5, and 6 leading into it?
I don't know. I didn't ask. No, but I mean, the kid just asked questions in general. I thought, man, I don't need this behind me for 2 hours and 15 minutes. But within 5 minutes, the kid kind of got wrapped up in the story so much, he didn't ask anything. So okay. Thank God for that.
So there's that.
Yeah. Do you need to see 4, 5, and 6, or as we human beings call it, Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi? Probably not. It might help because it's far enough that Luke is now a Jedi Master who has been missing for, I believe, 30 years. Leia is now a general. Han and Chewie are just Han and Chewie. They're just older. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, there is a Harrison Ford actually cares alert. For the second time this year between this and Age of Adeline. So congratulations, Harrison. Good to see you back caring about being in movies. I'm sure his check also helped as well. The other part with the film is I think when you have, of course, two of the newcomers, Daisy Ridley, who we heard in the skit, SNL skit, as well as John Boyega, they got some decent chemistry together. But then again, all you had to do was have better chemistry than Natalie Portman and Hayden Christensen, which isn't really asking a lot. Mm-hmm. So there is that. Don't need to see it in 3D.
No?
No.
Nope. Did you see it in 3D?
I did see it in 3D. I would have liked to have seen it on an IMAX screen because that way you have that. I was thinking back. When I was 7, of course, you know, screens were much larger and I was much smaller. So that kind of washed over feeling, I probably would have gotten a sample of that if I got to see it on an IMAX screen. And I have checked with the 14-year-old to see if she wants to see it, and not really interested. So I probably,
really?
I've asked. I mean, she wants to, and I'm going to get to her.
I'll see it when it comes out on DVD.
Yeah, that's right, the little hipster. But no, actually, there's a film that came out on DVD this week that she and I watched that I understand some of her choices for wanting to watch stuff, certain things, and not wanting to watch certain things. But I'll get to that in a little bit.
Star Wars is too mainstream?
Oh, she's not that bad. Come on. She's with that with Frozen. So, action sequences are good. There's a few clunker lines, but guess what? There have been clunker lines in all six of the other six films.
It's also an art film.
It's not an art film. It's opened every other theater on the planet. And there's a siren, if you can hear that. Overall, I will say I liked it. I did not love it. And there will be people there will be people in the world. I know that's a kind of a nice
it's
way.
It's flawed.
Yeah, it's. I was trying to dress up the way of saying it's flawed.
Give us one way that it's flawed.
No, it's not. It isn't. It's not that it's flawed. It probably is. No, but it didn't resonate with me.
Okay.
Seeing Star Wars at age 7 in the theater, that's hard to capture. And it's been over 30 years going on 40 of science fiction, blockbusters, and I've been grumbling about the last year, trilogies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just got Mockingjay out of my brain, which and there was a part of me that I was hesitant about emotionally getting invested in another trilogy. And so the fact that it's well made,
did you feel invested in The Hunger Games?
The first one, yeah. Yeah, second one, because the second one is always a stepping stone.
Right.
So the third one is supposed to be a slam bang, and of course the third one was 2. Mm-hmm. So it wore out its welcome in my world. So the fact is, and also the fact that I think a fresh pair of eyes with J.J. Abrams. So kudos to him. And kudos, I guess to a certain degree, kudos to George Lucas for letting somebody take it over. Because I know he got slammed really hard for the last three. And by the way, the episode 1, 2, and 3, first one was mediocre. Second one, I liked it as a science fiction Raymond Chandler novel, although I don't think that's what they were going for. And the third one was Othello, basically. It's a jealousy story.
Yeah.
And he turns into Darth Vader. You know, but yeah, nobody, of course, you can't be, you won't be forgiven for dropping to your knees and screaming, no, sorry, that's not happening. But no, I enjoyed it. I'm just not going to be as wrapped up about it as other people. And I will be accused of hating cinema because I didn't love it and think it was the greatest film ever. But it was just interesting to hear kids watch it and kind of have that feeling that I did 4 decades ago.
Sure.
So there. And it was funny. I was on Channel 13 this morning, and I got screen time with Julia.
Yeah.
That was nice. I invited her to the film sociology show, so we'll see if that actually happens.
Cool.
But one of the things that they asked me about was, is it appropriate for kids? Because children are our future. And I said, well, there's a lightsaber battle sequence. There's, you know, lasers. There's a lot of pew, pew. And from a distance, there's a scene where some planets get blown up. And when I explained this, I said, there's no blood, there's no gore. I didn't give away any ending secrets. And I finally asked Julia, I said, so what's the scariest thing your kid has ever seen? And without a beat, she says, me without makeup. That's why I want her on the show. She's quick-witted. She's all that and quick-witted. So, I like the film. I enjoyed it. It's not going to crack my top 10. I don't think it should be nominated for Best Picture.
Good movie. Good movie. Not going to make it into the top 10.
Right. That's my Herm Edwards. So.
Good movie.
But, yeah, enjoyable. Go see it. There's plenty of screens. You can go see it.
Yeah.
Do you have a response?
You
do not.
That
was a good movie.
What did you want to play?
I don't know. I was looking for something, but I don't have something where you like something, but you're not thrilled about something.
We'll have to work on that. That's our 2016 goals. More audio responses.
The nuances of the responses.
Of like, not love.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's out there, and it's all over. All right, moving on. Yes, sir. Oh, you have...
Shall we make a bet on how long this stays in theaters? How long do you think this is going to stay?
Oh, gosh.
It is December 18th.
Yes. Birthday Eve. When do the Academy Awards get announced?
I don't know.
Could you look it up?
I can look that up.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI.
You're just now joining us.
Point. You just missed my review. Liked it, didn't love it. Good, not great. And by the way, some of my other fellow IFJA guys, which are kind of with me on this one. And by the way, if you pick up Nouveau this week, you can see an article about the Indiana Film Journalists Association. And we selected our award winners, which, Kobe, we should actually pull up Nouveau.net.
Okay.
And we'll recite those. Of course, a little later on in the show, we'll have my chat with actor Nicholas Smith from a few years ago. He passed away December 6th at the age of 81. But, yeah, you can go to Nouveau.net or pick up a Nouveau. Have a newspaper in your hands. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can see an article about how the IFJA selected their films, as well as a wonderful old picture of the old white guys with glasses and some young white guys with glasses. Some less doughy than others. And, you can see a picture of me up there.
I'm looking for it.
Nothing?
I'm looking for it.
Well, that's right. All right, Kobe was asking me, how long will Star Wars stay in theaters?
The ceremony is February 28th. When they will announce the nominees, I don't know.
How about the end of February?
Think there's going to be, like, one screen, one showing in... say probably a majority of theaters that still has this
by the end of February.
By the end of February?
Yeah.
Okay.
There because
two solid months. Two and a half. Yeah.
Two and a half solid months. In the old days, Mr. Slagle, mm-hmm. when there were less theaters, but there would be movies that would stay for months. If I remember, you know, that's actually not bad research to do of the longest. I'm sure Star Wars, when it came out in 77, stayed in some theaters for a year. It was that big.
Yeah.
So I think in the multiplex world and you people with your downloading and your Hulu and your Netflix, I think a solid 2.5 months, that's doable. I think that's doable.
I could see that.
Are you guys going to see it?
Yes. Don't know when, though.
Okay. Going to get a sitter for Frank. I don't need a sitter. By the way, for the record, Frank is a cat. It's a cat. Frank does not sit. Frank doesn't sound like this. It's a cat. And it doesn't sound like, Shaq.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Opening in theaters today. Also, if you don't want to brave the lions of Star Wars or want to sit next to the people with lightsabers or children, a film that is being pushed for the end of the year award season is called The Danish Girl. And it's from director Tom Hooper, who we know won Best Director for The King's Speech and did the musical of Les Mis. And it stars Eddie Redmayne and Alicia Vikander, who, by the way, is the busiest woman in Hollywood this year. There was a couple years ago where Jessica Chastain was in 6 films. She is in this one. This was the young lady that we know from, she was in Burnt, the Bradley Cooper chef movie, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Ex Machina, which we had some discussion with at the end of the year for awards. The Bianca Really Wants to See This With Her Mother film, Testament of Youth. You know why, Cobe? It's set in England at World War I.
Nope.
And she was in the really sad reunion of Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore, the film Seventh Son. Not very good. Anyway. It is based on a true story. It's set, you know what, this one is set in Copenhagen in 1925.
Mm-mm.
No? Okay.
Nope.
And it is about one of the stories of one of the earliest transgender people, of happily married couple who, as time goes on in their marriage, the man starts to feel more comfortable as a woman and his wife who supports him on this. So this film has a kind of a soft focus, arty date movie feel to it, almost like Carol, which is opening, I think, next week, and we'll talk about that, the Todd Haynes film, where it's being pushed as a very, very important film, and I think the message is stronger than the actual result itself. You know, good performances from Redmayne. Of course, last year he won an Oscar for The Theory of Everything, and Alicia Vikander bounces off of him really well. And I think for those who don't have a lot of transgender information, especially with the historical context of what people had to go through, the surgeries, the fact that, you know, it was a huge gamble in the 1920s to have procedures done like this. But it's also about, and it's similar in The Theory of Everything, where it is a story about a couple, but it's not the traditional love story that you expect. It's more support and understanding. I mean, the first half of Theory of Everything, it was kind of like that, you know, kind of traditional love story, and then it took a much different turn if you know the story of Stephen Hawking. And so anyway, it is similar to that. It's a good film with really good performances. So if you want to take a break from Star Wars, that is out in theaters as well.
Now that was a good movie.
Also in theaters, and I always am curious about the films that open the same weekend as the gigantic blockbuster, whether it's Jurassic Park, and I guess now the Fast and Furious series can be in this, when Terminator, when I always remember when I was in college, when Terminator 2 opened, and the film that also opened that same weekend, sadly, was Mel Brooks' film Life Stinks, which nobody saw. In the same weekend that Star Wars opened in 1977, the Martin Scorsese musical starring Robert De Niro and Liza Minnelli, New York, New York, opened, and it tanked. So I'm wondering, you know, and I understand some studios' idea, you get the alternative audience, you know, those that don't want to see. You just hope it's a big enough alternative chunk. So there are two choices. One I did not see, one I did see, and you'll know why. Who asked for Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip?
Nope.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
No. I don't, you know, here's the thing. I don't even know if I know anybody who has kids that like the Alvin and the Chipmunk movies.
It's too bad for the chipmunks.
Oversaturation? Mm-hmm. Of course, it's kind of been that way since the 80s. They had a series. They had several series. And they had albums.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their Urban Chipmunk was an album.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, you can look it up. You look it up, you can
I'm
find it.
I'm going to look up the discography.
You're going to look, you if you look up and you Google image, and you'll see a recreation of the poster with Alvin. Hot keyboard typing.
Click, click, click.
Click, click, click. See that?
Oh, man.
That's really unfortunate, isn't it?
Wow. Chipmunk sing the Beatles?
Nobody asked for that. Oh, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, WFYI and Film Sociology, you're home for Alvin and the Chipmunks discography information. Let's hear it.
Chipmunk Rock. Actually, let's
start with the beginning. Of course,
let me get a list here.
We're at Christmas time, so the one that, of course, the song that started it all is being played somewhere on either a serious Christmas channel or there's a legitimate radio station that's going through a format change. So they play Christmas music from now until the end of the month. Is there that much?
Well, I'm trying to find the. Here we go.
Okay.
Wow! 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 Wow!
So
we're
I think what late 50s when Christmas time. Okay.
1959. Let's all sing with the Chipmunks.
That was an album.
60. Sing again with the Chipmunks.
Of course. Follow up. It was a huge successful album.
60. Around the World with the Chipmunks.
No.
61, The Alvin Show. 62, The Chipmunks Songbook.
Because it was on TV.
62, The Christmas with the Chipmunks. 63, yeah. Christmas with the Chipmunks Volume 2.
Good Lord.
64, Chipmunks Sing Beatles Hits.
No.
Chipmunks Sing with Children in 65.
Yeah.
Chipmunks A Go-Go in 65.
Oh, good Lord.
Chipmunks See Dr. Doolittle in 68. Go to the Movies in 69. The Very Best of the Chipmunks in 75. Chipmunk Punk. 1980.
That's an insult to punk music.
Urban Chipmunk.
That's an insult to country 81. Music.
That would be Rural Chipmunk.
God.
Chipmunk Christmas, 81.
Yeah.
But we already had Christmas with the Chipmunks.
Right.
Where were we? Chipmunks Go to Hollywood. Chipmunk Mania.
Good Lord.
20 all-time golden greats.
There's two collections.
Songs from our TV shows. Monk Rock.
Okay.
Chipmunk Adventure. Solid Gold Chipmunks 30th Anniversary Collection.
God.
Chipmunks and the Chipettes.
We haven't even gotten to the 90s yet.
Chipmunks and the Chipettes. Born to Rock is 88. Rocking Through the Decades is 90. Chipmunks Rock the House 91. Chipmunks in Low Places.
Oh, God.
92. That's... Greatest Hits. 35th, sing-alongs, Here's Looking at Me, A Very Merry Chipmunk, When You Wish Upon a Chipmunk, Club Chipmunk, The Dance Mixes in 96, The A-Files, Alien Songs in 98.
Oh, because, yeah.
Greatest Hits, Still Squeaky After All These Years.
Oh, good God.
Greatest Christmas Hits, Merry Christmas from the Chipmunks. A lot of repackaging here.
Of course, yeah, that happens after a while.
Still squeaky, still squeaky.
You know what? You know what's going to happen now? If
original motion picture soundtrack, 2007.
Oh God, there's going to be like the double disc deluxe edition with outtakes and not live cuts.
2008, Undeniable.
Oh God, that sound like Bob now.
Squeakle, Christmas with the Chipmunks, 2010, Chipwrecked.
That was a film soundtrack.
And all the hits and then some.
That's a lot of Chipmunk albums that's not needed at all. That's, as Otis would say, just sad.
And you know what? In the Chipmunk Christmas song that is playing on holiday radio stations.
Right now as we speak, yes.
There's a line in there at the end where Dave says, the Chipmunks want to sing it again. And Dave says, no, let's not overdo it. They should have listened to Dave.
Look at that. Look at Kobe pulling out a lyric there. A bit in the recording. Well done, sir. Anyway, yeah, The Road Chip opens in theaters. God knows why. Also opening in theaters, Little Girl Power Cinema, Sisters, reteaming on screen of Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. It is, and neither one of them wrote this. It's written by Paula Pell, who was one of the writers over at Saturday Night Live. And guess what? They play sisters.
Nuh-uh.
Although different than Baby Mama, this time around, Tina Fey is the screw-up, and Amy Poehler is the perfectionist. And they find out that their parents, and I love cinematic gene pools, the father of and father and mother of Amy Poehler and Tina Fey are Diane Wiest and James Brolin. Interesting. But the girls find out that their childhood home has been sold by their parents, and they have one last weekend before they have to move out, so they throw a party, a big reunion party. So I guess it's Tina Fey and Amy Poehler getting to do their version of an 80s slob teenage R-rated comedy, like Animal House, like Porky's.
I guess so.
That's kind of what they did, basically. And there's also, you know, Maya Rudolph has a small part in it. There's Rachel Dratch. And there's also other SNL cameos by current and former members. And Too Long, of course.
Flawed.
It's not quite. It's not quite Judd Apatow Too Long, but it could be a lot shorter. And I remember Chris Lloyd talked about this on the Film Me Up. There are really that much time left.
Yeah.
Okay. Geez. There's a few really low hanging fruit jokes, which I guess you could get away with it in the 80s, like sexually charged Korean girls and then jokes about lesbians, which I think would work in 1985 because that's the type of film that they were making, but doesn't really wash in today's world. So, I mean, they work well together. There's some amusing moments, but the other problem I have with the film, if you're gonna make a film and try to make an R-rated slob comedy of the 80s or a party movie of the 80s, like if you took an R-rated version of a John Hughes kid's house party only done by grown-ups, that's one thing. I guess I understand why you did it. Doesn't necessarily mean I have to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But this also taps into something that really sticks in my crawl. And this is, Cobe, you've heard me rant about this. When people my age or people slightly younger
or slightly over
bemoan the fact that they're not hip anymore.
Getting older is a drag, man.
There's nothing you can do about it. Get over it. Now, much to the credit, and of course I'm pointing the fingers at films like This Is 40 and Neighbors.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne as much as I like to look at her, you know, walking into a house party with sunglasses and hip hop playing while they're walking in slow motion. I wouldn't be surprised if the Chipmunks do that, you know, put on the sunglasses, Bad to the Bone playing as they enter a room. That's also a part of this. And I have no patience for somebody who feels that they're no longer relevant and hip. I'm sorry. You should really do something else. This is why maybe I haven't changed my wardrobe in 35 years. But
these things go together.
Yeah, these things go together. So anyway, that is out in theaters. Kobe, can we check the Tibbs? I thought I heard a rumor.
I got the Tibbs.
You do?
Yeah.
Is anything happening at your alma mater, or are they on Christmas break?
IU Cinema is on winter break. Things will resume down there Thursday, January 7th.
Uh-huh.
The IMA Winter Nights is coming Friday, January 8th.
And what are they going to kick off with?
Hoosiers.
Yes.
The Art Craft Theater this weekend, 18, 19, 20. Christmas Vacation.
Okay.
Skyline is closed.
Yes.
Tibbs.
Staying open.
One Screen.
Uh-huh.
Star Wars. And the Good Dinosaur.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard rumors that they were. I heard rumors that they were going to do a Star Wars marathon, but apparently not. Am I wrong on that?
I'm looking. I don't see anything.
Well, that's not bad either. You know, drive in December, and it's not California. Go for it. Hope your heater works. Anyway, you can still go to the drive-in. There's nothing wrong with that. You know what? Let's take a short break.
Okay.
And we'll replay my chat with Nicholas Smith, and we'll see how much time we have to wrap up in a pretty little bow because it's December. I'm not trolling for birthday gifts. You know what to do. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Haynes Sisters.
you imagine Freckleface having sisters as cute as that?
It's incredible.
Sisters, sisters, there were never such devoted sisters. Never had to have a chaperone, no sir. I'm here to keep my eye on her. Caring, sharing, every little thing that we are wearing. When a certain gentleman arrived from Rome, she wore the dress and I stayed home. All kinds of weather, we stick together, the same in the rain or sun. Two different faces, but in tight places, we think and we act as one. Those who've seen us know that not a thing could come between us. Many men have tried to split us up, but no one can. Lord help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord help the sister who comes between me and my man.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point, WFYI.org. Coby Slagle pulling out White Christmas.
I'm pretty good.
That's a good one. You guys like to watch that, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah, we also, and of course, Coby wants us to make sure we never forget Rosemary Clooney was 26 and Bing wasn't.
No.
Bing was 51.
No.
Guys run Hollywood. All right, ladies and gentlemen. English actor Nicholas Smith, best known as Mr. Rumbold from the famous British series Are You Being Served, passed away at December 6th at the age of 81. A few years ago, as a part of a promotion for the British Telly Club, Nicholas Smith was in this very studio, and I got to chat with him. And, of course, there were a few questions asked by the former kids correspondent Emma Sosi. Here's my chat with Nicholas Smith. How much theater work did you do before jumping into television?
Well, I've always done far more theatre than television, and I frankly prefer theatre. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for the question of you want to keep your face in front of the public, I wouldn't mind if I never saw a camera again.
How much television did you do before Are You Being Served came along?
Oh, a great deal. Mm-hmm. I was in a police series called Zed Cars. I did The Avengers. I did The Saint with Roger Moore. And a lot of individual plays, individual things. I appeared in something called The First Churchills, about the original member of the Churchill family. Mm-hmm. Played a villain called Titus Oates in that, who instigates the Popish plot and causes riots.
Now, were you getting a lot of authoritative figures or heavies at that time, role-wise?
Well, quite a few, simply because I'm rather large, you know. I mean, basically, I'm a rather lightweight style of actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to play fast farce and light comedy, but I had to play quite a few heavy characters, like this copper from Zed Cars, who was a tough Manchester cop who was inclined to take people by the throat and say, if you don't tell me where you were on Tuesday, I'm going to thump you, which he wouldn't actually, of course.
Mm-hmm. So how did Are You Being Served come along into your life?
Well, I'd done a series with one of our absolutely top comedians called Frankie Howard, which was called Up Pompeii. And it all took place in ancient Rome, well, in ancient Pompeii.
Mm-hmm.
And I played a Roman senator called Hideous in that. And a few months later, my agent rang me and said, David Croft, who directed Up Pompeii, wants you to play in a thing called Comedy Playhouse. And with a subtitle, Why Are You Being Served? And this was a sort of umbrella title, Comedy Playhouse, for some 10 or 12 totally separate short comedy plays.
Mm-hmm.
Different actors, different directors, completely unconnected. And I said to my agent in the usual way, is it a decent part? Or is the money all right? And she said, yes, it's fine. So I agreed to do it, went along and did it, thought it was very good,
mm-hmm.
and then sat at home waiting for my episode to be broadcast. And they didn't broadcast it. They didn't like it. The BBC disliked the whole idea. And so I thought, oh, well, that's a shame. But by then I was doing something else in the theatre and forgot about it. But that was the year of the Munich Olympics,
mm-hmm.
when older people will remember the dreadful business of the assassination of Israeli athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Olympic Games were cancelled for the rest of that day. And the BBC was faced with blank screens.
Right.
So they found an old B-movie and they stuck that on. That wasn't long enough. So they said, oh, well, we better put on this third-rate comedy playhouse thing. Nobody can blame us because it's an emergency. They put it on. It had such a colossal response from the public, letters and phone calls saying how much they loved it, that about 6 months later we made 5 more episodes. They stuck the original one on the front as an introductory one, and the rest is history.
Now, a little piece of trivia about the pilot was it is always promoted as being black and white, but you were there. It was filmed in color.
It was filmed in color. Well, not filmed. It was recorded, videotaped in color. Why only a black and white copy of that exists, I don't know. Probably the BBC had thrown it away.
And did they change their tune quickly when they realized what a big hit they had on their hands?
No. Every year, David Croft, who was one of the writers and also director and producer, had to fight the BBC to get us to do a new series. They'd say, oh, it's a bit trivial, you know, it's got no nostalgia quotient, there's no political slant, no sociological message or anything like this. It's just sort of funny, and that's a bit trivial for the BBC. And for years, this is what happened, and he had to fight to get it on.
Every year?
The last 2 years, they suddenly realized that perhaps it was really rather good.
So would you have to cancel work and if you found out when you found out that a new season was back?
Well, I mean, at least two of the actors, Larry Martin, who played Mr. Mash, very awkward,
yeah,
very
I
difficult
remember.
Character, always being a nuisance to himself. His agent rang the BBC in springtime and said, Larry has been offered 13 episodes of something, and he doesn't want to lose Are You Being Served? So are you going to do it again? They said, oh, I don't think we'll ever do that again. Oh, no, no. He'd better take the other part. And then 5 days later, they came through and said, right, we want Larry Martin for Are You Being Served? And his agent said, but you told him to accept this other offer. You mean he's refusing to work for the BBC? No, he's not refusing to work. You told him to do it because you weren't going to do Are You Being Served? Well, who said that? Who told you that? And he didn't work for the BBC for years afterwards because he'd insulted them.
Jeez. Well, working on the show, you talked earlier about lighting light and fast and farce, and that's all of that. I mean, that for a lot of people, myself included, that was our introduction to farce theater.
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely. If we didn't see it on a stage with all the slamming, I mean, the only thing missing maybe are the slamming doors, but those were in there as well. But as far as ensemble, I should say stock but well-developed characters and a lot of action. And when you're young and all that's going around, it's so much fun to watch, even today. I've probably seen each episode maybe 6-7 times. We've played it so much here.
Which is more than I have, of course. I watched it.
Well, you were there.
I watched it when it first came out. But like, you know, like a carpenter makes a table.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't make the table and say, right, that's finished, and walk away. He checks it. He goes around. Does it need polishing? Are the legs all the same length and so on? So I checked through each episode when I watched it. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen him since. Well, there were a few shown a few years ago, but it's very unusual.
How much time did you folks get to rehearse before working on an episode?
A week. A week per episode.
Wow.
So that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then either Friday night, Saturday night, or Sunday night, if some of us were working in the West End at the time, we would get in and we'd spend the whole day for the first time with the cameras, the sets, the costumes, sound effects, all the props and so on. So we spend the entire day doing that, go and have something to eat, come back, the audience would come in, about 400 people, and we would then record the show. And we could do it in about an hour and a half.
So you got doing it in front of an audience, you still get the theatrical experience, even though it's on television.
Well, you sort
to a certain, of do. To a certain degree.
Because to some extent, you've still got to play to the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And it went against all one's instinct. You know, the audience are over here on your left, but you have got to favor the camera on the right. But you do get the response. You get their laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can really time the stuff. I don't think anything is done in Britain with canned laughter for that reason.
Thank goodness. When you were also doing the show, would you also do a show, a play at the same time? Had you done that?
I did once. When we were doing Grace and Favour, or Are You Being Served Again over here, I was in The Mousetrap.
Really?
Which is the most famous Agatha Christie play.
And still running, I believe. No?
Oh, still running, yes.
Is it? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It was when I was there 10 years ago.
I hope you didn't go and see it because it's terrible.
No, we all saw their plays. I'll tell you about those later.
And I got a blow-up Lilo in my dressing room at the theater, and we would rehearse Are You Being Served up until sort of lunchtime, and then I would shoot to St. Martin's Theater, go into my dressing room with an alarm clock to wake me up, and lie down and go to sleep on the Lilo, wake up and do the show, then I'd be back rehearsing the following morning. It was very tiring. Mm-hmm. Not so much because the work itself is tiring, but the hours.
Sure.
It means you're starting work at 10:30 in the morning and finishing at 10:30 at night.
As an actor, did it? You talk about the working for the camera and your perspective. Did that throw off your performance on stage or vice versa?
Oh, no, it had no connection. The two were so totally different.
Okay. One of the things that's also enjoyable about the show is even with the personnel changes that happened at the very beginning and at the end, the ensemble was still there. And I think that's said to be something about the actors themselves, like you.
Well, that's kind of you. But the thing was, all of us had quite long careers
mm-hmm.
in the theater and on television, except John. He'd never worked on television before. But the rest of us had all... he had had a long experience in the theatre. And so we were very professional and very much used to working together, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you did one TV movie where the staff goes on vacation while the store is being redecorated.
Yes, unfortunately. I mean, I know the thinking behind that. The thinking was, Are You Being Served gets an audience of between 15 and 20 million. I think we had one 22 million,
mm-hmm.
which for a population of 60 million is an enormous number.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, we can make any old movie, and 15-20 million people will go and see it. Well, the public are not that stupid. They heard and learned that it was a rotten movie, which it was, and so they didn't go. But they tried to make a feature film in 1977, for about £250,000.
Ooh.
And you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It just was on the cheap and looked it.
I went through your resume, and for those who don't know, besides Are You Being Served, but film-wise, you got to work with Gene Wilder as a director, Richard Donner as a director, Mel Brooks, and Ken Anakin, among others.
And John Huston.
What Huston film did you work on?
Well, the story was that he couldn't get anybody in Hollywood to employ Angelica.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only saying that's the story, because
sure.
I can't vouch for the truth of it.
Don't worry, this is absolutely top secret.
Oh, that's okay. And so he said, well, I'll put on a movie myself and give her the juvenile lead. And it was a movie set in medieval times called A Walk with Love and Death.
Right.
And it was shot out in Vienna.
And I was working with Mr. Huston.
Oh, rather amusing. I mean, there was one occasion, I had this long shot, about a two-minute take,
mm-hmm.
which if you know movies is unheard of.
Right.
I mean, normally they're sort of 7 or 8 seconds. And I had to run across a field constantly talking and so on. And we did it 2 or 3 times. And John Huston said, that's fine, we'll print that one, you know. And then the first assistant came over to me while I was sitting having a drink and said, we want to do that shot again. So I said, okay, was it me? What is wrong? And he said, don't worry. Don't worry. You know, it's okay. You just do it. And I said, well, look, if it is me making a mistake and you don't tell me what's wrong, I'll just do it the same way again. It'll be equally bad. And he said, there's no need for you to worry. So I shouted at him and said, this is ridiculous. And John Huston came over and said, I will not have my first assistant spoken to in this way. I said, your first assistant is an idiot. He won't tell me why we're doing the retake. And he said, oh, was there something wrong with the camera? And then later on, we were doing another shot, and he came over and he winked at me and said, you can shout a bit in this if you like.
I like that. another title I wanted to throw at you and get your first memory of, because this really blew my mind, because I've actually seen this on television, Salt and Pepper.
Oh, yes.
With Peter Lawford and Sammy Davis Jr. and young Richard Donner directing.
Yeah, that was a very small part. I played a police sergeant, British police sergeant,
mm-hmm.
who comes up and asks them what they think they're playing at, you know. Sammy Davis was charming.
That's good.
He was delightful.
And I know you also worked on one of the longest titles I've seen. And it was one of your first films, Those Magnificent Men and Their Flying Machines.
That was my first feature film. Mm-hmm. And that was a non-speaking part. I don't know if you've seen the movie.
It's been a while.
But there was a group of firemen who kept rushing about and leaping on and off a fire engine. And I was one of them.
How many days did you work on that?
About two, I think.
How did you get involved with the 12 chairs?
Well, as to how I got involved with it, I don't know. I may have auditioned for Mel Brooks, mm-hmm. or he may have just picked me out of the Spotlight casting directory. I honestly can't remember.
And I know you were an actor. You played an actor in the show, in the film.
Yes, yes.
What were you doing?
Well, the setup was that before the Russian Revolution, Ron Moody, who was the star, mm-hmm. his family had hidden the family jewels in one of a set of 12 chairs. After the revolution was over, he goes back to Russia to try and find these chairs, to find they've all been sold, each one to a different person. So the adventure is he's going around to these different people,
correct.
Trying to find the jewels. And in the course of this, he gets involved on a river steamer, which has I suppose you could call a small drama company on it. Mm-hmm. And he's told, well, I must have a drink, excuse me.
Please, go ahead.
He's told, you'll never have to go on. You'll never have to go on. You'll be there as an understudy. Then, of course, as you can imagine, it being a comedy, he does have to go on. And he walks on stage, and he's so terrified that he just stands rooted to the spot. And I played the actor who was playing the scene before he arrived, and having to say, would you like some tea? Oh, the poor chap, he's so tired after his long journey. It was quite fun. But half of it was cut. Well, that's movies for you.
That is showbiz. Now, my show has a pretty big listenership of people that like horror films. And when I saw that you had a listing in Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell as Death Wish.
Yeah.
Trust me. I mean, anything linked to Hammer, everyone's just going to flock to. How did you get involved with working on that film and working with Peter Cushing?
Well, there again, I can't remember how I got involved, but I suspect that my agent suggested me for it, and that was okay. Again, it was a very small part. It's an odd thing. I think maybe my appearance is against me, but I've been playing leading parts in television and leading parts in the theater for 40 years or more. Mm-hmm. But in films, always very small parts.
Was that the same with Adventures of Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He says, come in, Miss So-and-so, And I walk in and said something. Because he originally wanted me to say, hello, what do you want? Or something like this in a very deep voice. I said I thought it'd be more fun if I used one of the more rare British accents, which is a Plymouth accent. And so that's what I did. And I came, hello, my dear, what are you doing now? And that was really just a couple of comic entrances.
Mm-hmm. I was also curious about the television film version of Jekyll and Hyde. You played Hastings.
Well, I don't know whether that was for television.
Well, I think it was filmed in a later showed on television. But it was Kirk Douglas.
That
and
was Kirk Douglas.
Susan George,
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
Susan George, Donald Pleasant, Stanley Holloway,
Michael Redgrave.
Michael Redgrave and me,
mm-hmm.
one of the least known of all of them. And Kirk Douglas was charming because we were doing it with five video cameras. Which is unusual in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to transfer it to film stock later. And I was thought I was on, say, camera one.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk Douglas, who really does speak with his teeth clenched the whole time, which is rather nice. I'd always thought it was something he did in movies, but no, he does mm-hmm. in real life. And he said, Nicholas, which camera do you think you're on? And I said, camera one. He said, no, I think you're on camera five, the other side. If I were you, I'd favor a bit to the right, because otherwise we're just getting your profile. And I thought to myself, that is really nice. But then I have found that what we in Britain call the real McCoy, do you use that phrase?
Yes, we do.
The real McCoy, the really top people, are very nice. The really talented stars are delightful to work with, and he certainly was.
Who else is on your McCoy list?
Well, Dorothy Tutin, for one,
mm-hmm.
who played in a play called Portrait of a Queen, which we did in the West End, and then later on took to Broadway. And she was playing Queen Victoria, and she was absolutely superb. And I met Judi Dench a few years ago. I was working with her daughter, Finty, in playing the lead in a play called Lloyd George Knew My Father. And she came and saw the play. And she was just, you know, you're meeting somebody else's mother. Completely unaffected, no swagger or anything. Mm. Wonderful woman. Marvelous actress.
Well, I'm going to say we really enjoy having you here. You know, your work has been a part of WFYI for many, 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 many years. And I actually do have one other series of questions, but it involves my partner here. I do want to ask before she takes over, do you recall how you got involved with The Curse of the Were-Rabbit?
Well, I auditioned for them.
Mm-hmm.
I went down to see them in Bristol, which is where their headquarters are. They showed me the puppet of the vicar.
Did you like it?
Yes, I thought it was very funny. It was only about 10 inches high. No, a bit more than that, maybe 14 inches high, which surprised me. I thought they were bigger. And the thing I noticed in particular, that it had very sticky out front teeth. And so I stuck my own teeth out and played the part like this. So instead of saying mummy, it was money. And that's how I did it.
How long did it take for you to record your role?
Well, we had... I would go in and do one day, record a whole set of lines, and then maybe not go back for, 4 or 5 months or more and do another day, just depending on their schedule.
Mm-hmm. Did you wind up seeing the finished product?
Oh, yes, yes. They had a big premiere in Leicester Square in London, and we were all invited to go along. I went along with my wife, who at that time was okay.
It was a nice throwback to the old Universal horror films, I think, of the 30s and 40s.
Oh, I think it was very clever, extremely clever. And each time you watch it, you'll find bits that you missed the time before. I mean, like Gromit the dog will be reading a newspaper, and it's got some comic headline, which the first time you miss, you know, because it's all so quick.
Now, the children's film correspondent is dying to ask you a question or two. So, Emma, what would you like to say to Mr. Smith?
What was your favorite part of doing the movie?
Doing the movie? What, doing the Wallace and Gromit?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it all was, you see, because all the lines were so well written that I just enjoyed doing the whole thing.
And also, a really funny part. A really good part that I liked about when you were doing that movie was when you were telling Victor about those golden bullets.
Oh, yes, that was rather fun, wasn't it?
And also, I like how you were able to make him have the character have different reactions.
Well, the way we did it is you record the lines first, and then they make the puppets, the clay puppets, move in order to fit in with what you're doing.
Ah, I see. Also, a thing that I liked was you could sort of notice when you were trying to concentrate on something also in that movie.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It certainly went very well.
Mm-hmm. And also, I really like all the other Wallace and Gromit's movies, so it sort of tied into all the others.
Yeah, so they've done several, haven't they? They're very funny, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome.
Okay. My classic chat with actor Nicholas Smith, who passed away December 6th at the age of 81. Salute to you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
We'll dip into the archives again next week, but we will discuss The Hateful Eight, Concussion, we'll talk about the IFJA Awards, and films that made the 2015 National Film Registry. So, happy birthday to me. Go see a good movie, you deserve it, and Merry Christmas and December greetings next weekend. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We go. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.